Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Left of Straight Show with your host, Scott Fullerton, as we discuss everything under the rainbow sun, from LGBT issues to foodies, entertainment to books. Join us as we talk to some of the most interesting leaders and celebrity LGBT guests and allies on the internet. So grab a cocktail, it's always happy hour somewhere, and enjoy the show. Now, here's your host, Scott Fullerton.
Well, howdy, 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 everybody. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Left of Straight Show. My name is Scott Fullerton. I'll be your host for the next hour or so. It is Monday, May 22nd. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. I did a lot of absolute leavingness. Actually, I did a lot of small errands and took Mom to her happy place for a casino for a little bit. But had a good weekend here in downtown Northeast Ohio. Hope everything's going great in your neck of the woods. Had some great shows last week. Welcome back. Last week we had Terry Ray, Kevin Scott Allen, Robert Rollins, Blake MacGyver, Paul Richman, and Stephen Fales on the shows. Blake did a fantastic job doing his Blake Sings Barbara. If you were in LA and caught it, I had some of my spies go out to the show. Said it was just amazing. His entire show is a tribute to Barbara's 94 concert. And he had a great write-up in Queerty. If you don't read Queerty, a lot of my news sources there. It's www.queerty.com. He had a great write-up there. You might want to go read the interview. Talks all about his rise from child star through go-go dancing to the singer that he now is, an actor. So good, congratulations for him. Remember, if you miss any of our shows, you can always find them in two super simple places. Go to the website at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to my website for the Left of Straight Show at www.leftofstraight.com. That's L-E-F-T-O-F-S-T-R, the number 8.com. Or you can download our absolutely free app. You can go to your iPhone, to your Android, to your tablet. Search your app store, go to Left of Straight Radio, that's L-E-F-T-O-F-S-T-R, the number 8, radio, and it will come up absolutely free to download, and you will never miss an episode of anything on the Left of Straight Radio Network, so please do that for me. Today we have the fantastic Brandon Lee Roth. He's an actor, writer, producer, is really much more than that and does it all. He'll be my only guest on today because I have a couple things to do later this afternoon. But I'm really looking forward to talking to him in just a few minutes here. For the rest of the week, tomorrow, I have Wesley Woods on. He is a stand-up comic and an adult film actor for the LGBT community and has a great, interesting story and so funny and such a great personality. He'll be here for the first hour. And the second hour, I'm really excited about. I'm bringing back Mel England and Sherry Lewis. They're both phenomenal actors. They're going to be on the next season of Child of the 70s, Michael Vaccaro's great web series, but also an inspirational two people who have been living with HIV/AIDS for almost 3 decades now. Sherry was one of the first ones diagnosed back in 1987. Ago, still walking proud, and I think it was like 20 years for Mel England, but they have an amazing story of going through AIDS, what it was like, what their journey was, what recovery's meant to them, and what it means now, and I'm just excited to talk about that journey tomorrow. Then on Wednesday, our good Michael Vega is standing on my soapbox with me, where we're going to talk all the week's politics, LGBT news, and pop culture for the week. That'll be exciting stuff. Big thank you to my sponsors, Tony Guadagnino, who does all of my Twitter marketing for me. Thank you so much, Tony. CBT Candles out in LA. If you're looking for great quality soy-based candles, go to cbtcandle.com. They have a celebrity line and lots of great scents out there. The Love On Revolution is a great way to pay it forward. Go on to loveonrevolution.com and find out how you can make a difference and pay it forward. It's a great way, not just individually, but as a company or as a group of people to do that. And, of course, my buddy Alexander Rodriguez over at On the Radio every Tuesday night on Universal Broadcasting Network, always helping me out, getting me some great guests, giving me some great advice in this business we call radio here. So thanks to them. All right, now I teased it last week. I'm getting ready to launch on July 1st an Indiegogo campaign for season 3 of Left of Straight Radio. And I know you guys give money all the time. I know I'm asking for money for all these great guests I have on all the time. But I really hope you can save up your pennies over the next couple weeks and donate to this. We're going to bring the Left of Straight network, at least the Left of Straight show, and probably Standing on My Soapbox, a couple of shows to video next season. Starting in July, we're going to start doing video podcasts. So you'll be able to see us live. If you don't see the guests live necessarily, some will be able to Skype in live. If not, we'll be able at least to show their YouTube videos live of what they're doing and their projects, or the slideshows going live during the time, and it'll be on broadcasting live through Facebook and or YouTube. So I'm very excited about that. That's going to take some money to get the camera setups I need, get the software that I need, and then we're also going to do a trip to LA to get some shots I need there and to get some training on some stuff I need there. So I need your help. $5,000 to $7,000. Got some great perks coming from a lot of my friends that have been on the radio before. Got these amazing pride bracelets that commemorate marriage equality available. So every $10 you can do, $5, $10, $5, $500, I'm going to be most appreciative for. I'm going to do a big campaign push starting on July 1st for that, a couple days before, and it's going to help the Left of Straight Radio Network get to the next level as we bring even more people on. Jones is looking to do a new show, trying to talk him into doing a show about, he's such a great cook and a single LGBT parent for the LGBT community, or two lovely girls. So we have lots of new shows coming on. So we're going to be talking about that for this week and next week, and I hope you'll jump on board for it. As far as news goes, things that kind of jumped out at me, not too much. If you saw the Billboard Music Awards last night, everyone's buzzing today about Cher. 71 years old, still looking like a freaking champ. Believe if I could turn back time, I don't care if she lip synced it to a track or not. She is freaking amazing. So that was very cool. Katy Perry, of course, closed out the Saturday Night Live season this Saturday. She did her song Swish Swish with just a bevy of drag queens all over the place. Just a good day there. And of course, you know, I'm a Golden Girls fan, right? So just announced today that they're making a Golden Girls Clue board game where it's going to be, instead of such and such with a candlestick, it's going to be who ate the cheesecake in the library. It's going to be all about the cheesecake. So you got to love the Golden Girls fun. Clue is coming in June for only about $40, I think, and Monopoly Game's not too far behind. And if you are a Golden Girls lover such as I believe on June 12th, and I'll double confirm that, Jim Colucci is going to be my special guest. Jim wrote the tell-all, be-all, love-all book on the Golden Girls. He got interviews with all of them except for Estelle Getty, and it is the quintessential Bible to Golden Girls. He's going to be on the show talking about that. He's also done one on Will and Grace, and of course they're coming back. And his new book is on the Love Boat, so Jim's a real fun guest. He'll be on just a little bit. So let's see, last thing we'll talk about, and then we'll get right on to our guests, because I know we have Brandon out there listening. Guys, they're making a Dynasty reboot. If you're my age, you'll know what Dynasty is. Think soap opera, think night soap opera, think Dallas, they rebooted. They're going to reboot Dynasty. So that's always a lot of fun. And if you know, on our Wednesday show on Standing on My Soapbox, we've been doing reboots the last 3 weeks, because everyone's being rebooted. One Day at a Time is being rebooted. They're bringing back all these shows, right? Dirty Dancing's been redone this week. So every Wednesday, I'm standing on my soapbox. Me and my special guest co-host, we recast a classic television series that we ask you guys to chime in. This week, Michael Vega is going to be my special co-host, and we are recasting The Facts of Life. So get your answers in to Left and Straight Radio Network. You can go to my Facebook page, to Twitter, to Instagram at Left of Straight, and we're going to be recasting Cutie, Blair, Joe, Natalie, Mrs. Garrett, and just for the hell of it, a little George Clooney, because why not? It's George Clooney. So that's going to be our Wednesday reboot this week. Guys, I'm going to take a little break here. We're going to play a little music, and when we come back, we're going to have the amazing actor, writer, and director Brandon Roth with us. Let's play out a little bit of Jay Knight. This is his new single, Shooting Star. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. You're listening to Left of Straight Radio Show. Talk to you in a minute.
When I look in your eyes, it's like time is through.
We are back. That's our buddy Jay Knight with Shooting Star. Jay was on just a few weeks ago. If you haven't got his new single, be sure to look it up on iTunes and Amazon. Guys, my first guest, I'm so excited today. He's not a triple, not a quadruple. He's a quintuple threat. He acts, he sings, he dances, he writes, and he directs. His newest film, Hawaiian Snap, was just voted the Audience Choice Award winner at last week's OutWeb Fest in L.A. His love of acting soon introduced him behind the scenes of the creative part of the business as a writer and director. He's done many of his own projects. He's also very into fitness and spending time with his friends. And I'm so excited to learn more about him today. Please welcome for the first time to the show, Brandon Lee Roth. Hello, Brandon. What's going on, man?
Hi, how are you? How's it going?
I am doing amazing. Thanks so much for being on the show. How are you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah. I'm excited to be a part of the show. I've heard so much about it, so.
Well, thank you.
I'm glad
my pleasure. I think I told you when I reached out to you, I've been following you on Instagram forever because I guess you're friends of friends and everything, and you're a damn handsome man to look at there, Brandon Roth. But, of course, then I see Michael, our good friend Michael Vega, do a little post about you a couple weeks ago. I said, I got to reach out to that guy. And thanks to Michael and everything, we got you on here, and wow, this is just everything's coming up roses for you, my friend. Congratulations on winning the award this week.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, we were really excited about that. And it happened to be my birthday. The day of the screening, which was the premiere showing of the film, was on my actual birthday. So that was a really good birthday gift for me.
I like that. Well, we're going to talk all about it in just a bit. Let's kind of go through a little bit of order here. Let's start, since you're the first time on the show, start at the beginning. Tell everyone a little bit about yourself. I know you grew up in Minnesota. Tell me a little bit about that. What kind of a kid were you, and what got you into acting?
All right. Well, yes, I've been in California for 10 years, but prior to that, I grew up in a very small town called Worthington, Minnesota, graduating class of 150, so everybody remembers that time that you ate glue in the second grade, you know, that kind of thing. Very small town.
Right.
And yeah, I grew up in a family of, I have an older sister. So it was me and my older sister and my mom, my dad. And I've been performing since I can remember. My mom had me doing, you know, plays and churches and plays at community theaters. And I was always singing and doing that kind of stuff there, so, and doing the talent shows, and anytime there was a show coming through town, I was auditioning for it, and that was just kind of my passion, it was kind of my zhuzh, you know, and I,
nice.
I did take
dance.
Nice,
very first role was?
Oh, God, what was my very first? It was The Wizard of Oz, and I was so excited. There was this touring company that would come through in the summers and do community theater, and they were doing The Wizard of Oz, and my mom said, I didn't want to be a flying monkey. That was like the one thing I did not want to be. And then I got cast as a flying monkey.
Oh, you're kidding.
And she,
oh, no.
No. But it was good. But it's good. It's good for, you know, a kid to learn that their first time going out. You know what I mean? So it was good.
I love
she
that.
Made me do it. And I'm glad I did it. And yeah. So that was the first role, flying monkey.
That is so great. Then you decided to move to L.A. 18 years old, that had to be kind of scary. Talk about what ignited the passion with there so early, and what was it like your first couple years there?
So I think when I grew up, I always knew I was going to go to either one of the coasts. It was either New York or L.A.
Gotcha.
There was, like, no question about that growing up, for as long as I can remember, because before wanting to be an actor, I wanted to be a vet for a couple of years. And then I think when I was like 6 or 7, I was like, oh, I could do what they do. And I would want to do that, you know, on the TV. So, and then I moved out to LA. I got a scholarship at a conservatory out here called AMDA, where we just did musical theater 24/7. So I came out here for that for college. It was a 2-year program. And then, just kind of try to make it on my own. It was really interesting because I didn't have anybody out here besides, like, some distant relatives
right.
that I didn't really know. But, Yeah, I was coming out on my own, 18. My mom and my dad and I, we packed up my little Chrysler Sebring convertible, packed to the brim, and drove out here across country. It was like a three-day trip. It was so much fun. And then they dropped me off here in L.A., and it's been home ever since, yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. Well, if I was coming from Minnesota, yeah. I think I'd pick L.A. over New York, too. There's no snow in L.A. New York, you still have snow to
make. Right, exactly. Exactly.
Good choice.
Exactly. The no snow. Very, very good choice.
Very cool. And what was your first apartment like?
Oh, gosh. My first apartment, I remember.
You're living
I
on
was
your
sharing...
own, you're in a new city. What was that like?
Oh, I was sharing this junior one bedroom with a friend of mine, and our rent was like $700. It was something crazy, you know. Because I would talk to my sister back home. She had a two-bedroom, two-bath. She had a garage. She had a yard. She had, you know, washer and dryer and unit, and was paying what I was paying for half of my studio apartment.
I hear you, buddy.
At the time.
So that's why I haven't moved back to L.A. Believe me, I can't sell my house enough to get back there. It's terrible.
yeah, the hustle, you have to be on the hustle out here for sure.
I have a three-bedroom, and my friends have, I have a three-bedroom, two-bath house with a full-furnished basement, like a 1,400-square-foot top, which isn't a lot, but with the basement, it's like 2,800 square feet, that the most it's going for in my neighborhood, and I'm in a really decent neighborhood, I might be able to get $140,000 for. I don't think I can get a guest house in L.A. for that. It's horrible.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's getting crazy, but it's the price we pay to live in this beautiful weather.
And so now it's 10 years later. You've been there for 10 years now, if you can believe it or not. What have you learned about yourself, and what have you learned about the city?
Oh, God, yeah. When I first came out here and after I got done with school, I was auditioning a lot and pushing a lot, and I was doing a lot of theater out here in L.A. and trying to also do as much film and TV as I could. And I was really still discovering who I was as a person. So it was really hard for me to be confident in auditioning when I didn't really know who I was. So I think I struggled for quite a few years. And then it wasn't until recently, maybe 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, I started getting back into writing. When I was in high school, I would do creative expression in speech, which is you write your own pieces for a speech tournament. And, go and compete, and I went to state, and I almost placed for nationals, but
wow.
So I got back on my writing kick, and I never really thought about, you know, using that out here in LA, and it's kind of turned into this great new thing that I've discovered. So I've written and produced three short films now that I've starred in and written and produced and put together. And so it's like we got some good momentum going. But, yeah, it's kind of turned into a different career. I thought maybe I would just act or something, but now it's turning into this multifaceted, multi-hat-wearing kind of thing, which I absolutely love. I'm having so much fun doing it. So it's good.
That's fantastic. It's amazing. Now you're an out-and-proud actor. Were you able to be out before you moved to L.A., or what kind of a that would be a culture shock in and of itself from 12,000 people to L.A.?
Yeah. When I was growing up in Minnesota, I actually wasn't out. I had girlfriends. I was straight at that time, I guess you could call it. Now looking back, I was like, okay, maybe not. Like
speaking of acting, boy, but never mind. We won't say that.
Right. And then I moved out here, and I kind of discovered that side of me, which was part of my struggle at the beginning as an actor, because I think when I first came out here, it was still not really, the gay thing was still not taking off as much as it has now.
Sure.
You know, there wasn't a Matt Bomer, and there wasn't a strong Neil Patrick Harris presence at that time, you know, now that he got
right.
back on How I Met Your Mother and stuff. And Ellen was
still tough, to be honest, right? But, yeah.
Right, it was still tough at that time. Right, it was still tough at that time, and I was told that was still kind of something that you wanted to hide or you didn't want to share with people and in castings and stuff. So I was being really protective of that. And then it wasn't until, like I said, with the writing, I started discovering that I wanted to write roles for young gay actors that could be out and gay and crowd. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't have to try to act straight to be in a film. You know what I'm saying? So
Right. That's
kind of where my niche is right now, trying to do films like that.
That is very cool. You've done a lot of good work for yourself. Now, was Logan Plus your very first film you made, or what was your first film?
Well, yes, my first film I made was Logan Plus. I'd worked on the script for a while. That was a labor of love, and it was a great learning experience. That was my first time doing that side of production in a big way with multifaceted people, working with a big group like that. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. It's a 15-minute short that is now streaming on Reverie.com, which is a gay live streaming app that you can go online or you can get on your phone.
Reverie's doing such great work now. They were a big sponsor of the Outfest, but I mean, they are doing so many good things now. I'm trying to get my little podcast on there. My buddy Alexander's is on there, and I want to get my little happy butt on them. They're doing great.
Yeah, they're awesome. They're great. They're great to work with. They're great guys too, and just their message that they're pushing is really awesome. So
nice. And I saw for Logan Plus, Michael, we were just talking about Michael Vega was there. Had you guys known each other before that, or how did you guys get to know each other?
So me, Michael and I, we got to know each other through working in the bars. We worked at the same bar. And we became really close friends because we bonded over the whole acting thing, him and I, and performing. And we both love musical theater, and we both love arts and that kind of thing. So we really connected, and he's like, you know, we always joke that we're sisters, you know, we're just like to be chatty about everything. And so, yeah, when we were doing Logan, I had him come out for this little cameo role. It was really awesome of him to come out and support and do it, and to be able to have him on set and stuff. It was really awesome. So
nice.
You can also catch Michael Vega and Logan Paul.
There you go. Very cool. Yeah. Speaking of musical theater, I mean, you've done quite extensive Liz, you were in Oklahoma Into the Woods was back in Minnesota, I think. You were Carousel, West Side Story, My Fair Lady, High School Musical. That takes a lot of chops. How did you develop? You were singing as well as acting lessons the whole time, or are you just a natural singer?
I sang in the church growing up since I was, you know, just a little kid, as long as I could remember. And I always kept that up. My mom, you know, she always, and my dad, they're very supportive, and they always pushed me to, like, to really be driven and do that kind of stuff. When I was in high school, I went to, I was a member of All-State Choir for Minnesota, so I was one of the top 10 tenors in Minnesota for that year.
Wow, that's awesome.
So, yeah, I'd always worked on my voice. And then when I came out here for AMDA, I went to musical theater training there, and then I started doing musicals here in LA. But, you know, they are, what's the word, they're very far apart and not as compensative as it could be, you know, so I kind of started switching back into film and TV. But it was fun. It was fun. I got to do a lot of great shows for a lot of great companies. I was at the Downey Theater and then a theater out in Rancho Cucamonga where I did West Side Story. But it was fun. It was awesome to work out here and do stage for a little while. But now I've kind of turned away to just do film and focus in on that.
I hear you. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I always forget that L.A. has, like, more stages almost than New York, but they're all very small, very hard to get budgets for. And like you said, really doesn't pay much. It's all labor of love when you're doing theater in L.A. pretty much.
Yeah, seriously, L.A., I always said, has a different appreciation for theater than maybe New York does. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, yeah, but it's good. It was fun to do some shows out here and see the great theaters because they do have some big, beautiful theaters. That the Downey Theater is huge. It's gorgeous, but a little bit of a drive from Hollywood where I am.
I hear you. Now, one of your first movies was a horror movie, and it seems like everyone gets their breaks in a horror movie. That Bloody Homecoming, what's it like filming a horror movie? Were you a fan of horrors before, and did it kind of, was it silly to see how they're actually made, or tell me what your experience was like with that show?
Yeah, I think, so Bloody Homecoming was great. It was one of my first big films as a supporting actor here in L.A., And they flew us out to Austin, Texas, and we shot for 3 weeks. It was an amazing experience. I got to see Austin, and it was amazing. But, horror films, I never really liked horror films growing up, and it wasn't until later that I started really appreciate them. And now I really do enjoy a good scare. But that film was a lot of fun. It was very cool. We had a great time on set. It was a bunch of us kids, and we were all kind of new, so everybody was just as excited as the next person, and it was great. We got a great few write-ups about it, great mentions about that film. And then, now doing Hawaiian Snap is a horror film, and it's kind of funny revisiting that genre for the first time since Bloody Homecoming. So.
I want to ask all about that. That's so cool, because I can't do horror films. I'm just not into it. I don't like being freaked out and scared. So I was wondering if I was ever on the set, it might help me, because I know it's fake on the set. I think it's real when I go to the theater,
right.
So it freaks me out. But I don't
know. Yeah, it's crazy on set. It's so fun to be on set with this stuff, because so much goes into it, into like horror films with all the fake blood and all the special effects that they do and stuff. So it's cool to be on set and get to see all that stuff and how that stuff is made and the prosthetics and that kind of thing. But yeah, I used to be super scared of horror films, and maybe doing Bloody Homecoming is maybe a little less scared of it, because it was shortly after that I started getting into them.
There you go. I think I need that. That would help me a lot. Well, so
yeah.
Cool. We got so much more to talk about, Brandon, but we're going to take a quick break. I want to talk all about, I can't believe you were this close to being regular with Ryan Murphy. We're going to talk about that in a bit, about what's happening now. Of course, your great new movie. All sorts of fun stuff coming on with Brandon Roth, guys. We're going to play a little bit of friend Levi Christ. This is So Much Better. You're listening to Left of Straight. She'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Take an afternoon drive. I've been working too hard. I want to leave it all behind me. Pushing and pulling, yeah, the world keeps spinning around and around. But I go with the flow. Nobody's gonna get me down. Think I tend to see goodbye the way that love's gonna be. It's a super sexy, conscious, cosmological ecstasy. Getting hold of me. Your body unwind. You see, you got everything you want. You just gotta open up your eyes. Sing it, holding on to something when there's nothing that you can do to change it. Just let it go with the flow. Get about your business doing you. Make it only street. Oh, it's a super sexy, conscious, cosmological ecstasy. Get it hold of me. It's so much better now. Baby love, don't you know that it's so much better now. Feel good, let it go. And it's so much better. Make it on easy street. It's a super sexy conscious cosmological ecstasy. Get a hold of a
All righty, that's our good buddy Levi Christ with So Much Better. Guys, we're talking today to writer, actor, director Brandon Roth. Brandon, so cool all the stuff you're doing. We're talking about starting things off back in early 2010, 2012, really starting to pick up. And then 2014, you were cast in Open, which is a freaking Ryan Murphy of all things, with two of my favorite people, Cheyenne Jackson and Ryan Murphy in it. So now I feel like I'm one degree of separation away. So thank you very much for that, by the way.
Yeah.
And tell me about that experience. Unfortunately, HBO didn't pick it up, little rat bastards, but talk to me about that experience.
Yes, yes. If anybody from HBO is listening, please dig it back up and let's do it. But
yay!
Right? But yeah, so that show was really interesting. I was working at the bars as a server in West Hollywood, and one of my regulars came over. His name's Joe Greenwich, and he said, oh, you've got to run over to this bar next door. The bartender's friend is in casting for an HBO thing. They're looking for blonde guys, like surfer types. So you should go. You're totally – he's like, I don't really know much about it, but you should go. So I ran over there. Like, I checked on all my tables, and I ran in the middle of my shift over to the bar next door. And I went to talk to the bartender, and he's like, yeah, give me your I'll give you my email address. Just send me the stuff, and then I'll send it to my girl. She does casting for HBO. He's like, I can't guarantee anything, but she was saying that they were still looking for a blonde – these blondes. So he's like, okay. Sent him my stuff. They sent me the script, and I was, like, going over the script or the sides, and I was like, oh, I wonder what this is, and then I kind of started connecting all the dots, and I went in and auditioned for them, and, yeah, they called me, and they said, hey, we'd love to cast you in this part, and then that's when I realized it was a Ryan Murphy show, so I totally flipped out because he had seen my audition tape and casted me, and I was like, oh, my gosh, Ryan Murphy cast me off of the words I've said as an actor. That's amazing. So totally flipped out. Got treated like royalty. Like, they send people over to my house with an updated script. They're like, oh, we just updated the script. We'll send somebody over. They come to the door and give me the new script, and it was very, very – I felt like a star, you know, and I got my own trailer when I got there, and it was an awesome show, a great concept, and I was going to be a reoccurring on this series, so I got a good chunk in the pilot. I had this very cool scene, but I remember just being so ecstatic about it, and Ryan Murphy, you know, at the top of his career is great, and I love all of his shows, so getting to work with him was amazing, and something I will never forget as an actor was walking into the scene, and he was already sitting in the room that we were doing the scene in, and just him walking around the room, and his creative energy was just, it was just so cool to witness that in person.
Oh, I can imagine. That is awesome. I bet they're freaking kicking themselves now. I mean, Ryan Murphy, everything he touches turns to gold. I don't know why they would turn down a pilot by him. That's ridiculous.
It was kind of, right. They canned it. So that means that they get to keep it and then possibly revisit it. I mean, who knows if they will, but yeah, it'd be cool if they did.
That would be freaking awesome. Now, did that kind of experience, I saw you made a really cool, I mean, it was like an amazing little hotel spoof, a couple of things like that. Did that kind of lead to that, or did your hotel spoof lead you to be a Ryan Murphy fan, or tell me about that?
Right, so I'd been a Ryan Murphy fan, then I got cast in the show, and then I heard that it wasn't getting picked up. I was just kind of like a little devastated, as one would be, right? You're like
right
there,
sure.
You're right there. And then, so yeah, the new season there had been talks of what the season was going to be, and I thought it would be creative to just get my friends together and make a promo as kind of an audition tape of sorts, I guess. Like, I thought, well, maybe if he sees it, maybe he would cast me in Hotel. So I put it on YouTube, and it actually went viral. It got quite a large amount of views in a short amount of time.
That's pretty amazing. You did a great job with it.
Thanks. Yeah, so it was kind of like my little audition tape without being asked to audition. I was tweeting Ryan Murphy the link to it. I was tweeting, you know, FX and all that stuff. But, no, it was fun to do, and it was just fun to get my friends together to do it anyway. But
that's what you got to do in LA anymore. I mean, so many people I talk to on this show, even though there's 8,000 choices in television and Hulu and Netflix, if you're not really creating your own content, it's hard to get noticed out there anymore. And so you got to do things like that. You almost have to build your own sizzle reel or your own little mini pilot before you can even get anything made. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's a changing industry in the way that things are working. A lot of it, I think, is because of Instagram and Snapchat and the accessibility to that kind of stuff, you know, and the immediate gratification of that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's changed the way that Hollywood has worked, even from when I first got here, I feel like. So
wow, that's crazy. So then in 2014, like I said, we had Open. I loved your couple takes on your Grindr combos. That was pretty funny stuff. You got to re-explore that, because that was funny.
Thanks.
I thought
that was great.
Yeah,
that's something I've always wanted to revisit. Thanks.
That was with your roommate or something, or just a good friend, or what was that?
A good friend of mine, yeah, Dana. And, yeah, I just thought, you know, would it be funny if Grindr conversations happened in real life? So we shot two episodes. We had a couple other episodes ready, but things got in the way, some family issues and stuff like that. So we just had traveling issues and scheduling issues, so we never got back to it, but
I think it would make an amazing web series. Web series are the way to go now, and I think that was a hilarious idea. I think you would be great with that. That was so much fun. So now we get into 2015, and you do your second short, you do Different Shades. That was – I love the plot of it. Tell them what it was about, and tell what that experience was like for you.
So Different Shades was a short film that I did as part of, like, a 72-hour film race. So they give you 72 hours to write and produce and edit and deliver them a short film that's like under 6 minutes. And I just thought, well, it'd be kind of fun to do one. I've never done one before. And I'd get my friends together to do it. But yeah, so they give you a few things at the beginning. Like when they send you out the stuff, they say you need like this prop and you need this action and you need this, you know what I mean? They'll give you a couple things you need to incorporate in your movie and then make a movie from there. It's not really genre. Like, you could do any genre. You can do pretty much anything, but have those things incorporated.
Gotcha.
So mine, at the time, it was based on an actual hate crime that had happened to me. So it's very serious. It was an outlet for me to kind of get that off my chest, because it had happened to me maybe 6 months to a year prior to that. So it was kind of my way to like get it out of my system. But yeah, I had gotten jumped in West Hollywood, and I got stabbed in my lower back. I had to get stitches and everything.
Oh, you're kidding. I didn't even know that story. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, just because I was gay and walking home. So yeah, so that was, so when I made the movie, it was about that. It's very heavy, but it was good to get it off my chest and turn it into art, you know, turn it into something I could be proud of.
And did it help? I mean, did you have to relive it and go through the pain first, but did it release it afterwards?
Yeah, totally. And I look back on that project and I just think I really like, it's close to me because of that. But yeah, I feel like we did a good job representing what that felt like and what I went through. Because I think that was the hardest part, is just people understanding what that must feel like, you know.
Good for you, man. That's tough subject. Good for you, man. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And now talk about where you got your name. I love Innovative Hamster. Where did this come from?
Or innovative squirrel. It's innovative squirrel.
The squirrel, squirrel. God, hamster. I'm thinking of, I wanted to talk about last, hopefully next, I'm thinking of that damn hamster, but innovative squirrel.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No, close enough. Innovative Squirrel is the name of my production company, and it comes from my granddad, actually. Him and I caught a squirrel once and kind of, like, fed it and raised it. It was, like, a baby that kind of had gotten injured, and we kind of raised it back and set it free. So it was kind of in honor of my granddad, and I just thought it'd be cool to kind of honor him and my production company. And so, and then
that
Innovative Squirrel kind of came out of that, yeah. So
very cool. All right, well, now let's transition down to Last Place Trophy. It's a little web series, another web series you started last year, and the hamsters, I tell you, I was dying for a little design.
You liked it again?
Oh, my God. Talk about where this came from. You got to direct one of these episodes. Tell me about Last Place Trophy for a second.
So Last Place Trophy is a series that is written by my friends, Maddie and Miranda. They kind of created it. And we shot, so the first episode, their pilot episode, they were shooting that weekend, and my friend Dana, who I did the Grindr thing with, she called me one day and she was like, hey, one of our people dropped out. Would you be able to do this web series this weekend and step in? She's like, we needed somebody, and you're the only person that I think could do it, you know? So I came in last minute for them, and I came in that weekend, and everybody thought it was pretty funny. And me and my co-star have such great chemistry improvising together, so it kind of worked out, so it kind of became a staple thing for me. And then, yeah, we shot the second episode, which was great, and then the third episode I directed, and the fourth episode, which is currently in post-production editing and stuff, I directed as well, so that'll be coming out soon. It's called Last Place Trophy, and it's on YouTube. You can catch it on YouTube.
Nice. So much fun. And like I said, you and your partner in it do have great chemistry. So the girls are fun together. I mean, the whole show, it was a lot of fun. I watched all three episodes the other day. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it's a fun little group. It's just a fun little show to get a good laugh and a good smile in. So.
And that brings us up now to today. We have this amazing new film, Hawaiian Snap. Talk about a little bit of what that's about. We're in the horror genre again. And then I want to hear all about WebFest LA that I was so mad I couldn't go to this weekend. Congratulations on winning the Audience Choice Award. That's amazing.
Thanks. Yeah, no, we're very excited to be able to call ourselves an award-winning film. So we're pretty excited about that. But yeah, Hawaiian Snap was kind of born out of thin air, like most projects are. But I was going on a trip to Hawaii for a couple of weeks, and I just thought I kind of want to shoot something while I'm there. I'd never been to Hawaii before, and I've heard how beautiful it was, and I thought I kind of came up with this concept to do a short film that is all shot through Snapchat. So the entire short 11-minute short film is a series of Snapchat videos. So
that's
kind of
crazy. I like that.
Yeah. So when we were in Out Web Fest, we were in the experimental and documentary category for that reason, because it's kind of an experimental idea for a film. But we did an 11-minute short or 12-minute short about this guy who takes his honeymoon trip to Hawaii by himself after his wedding gets called off. So he can't get refunded for their honeymoon, so he decides to take the trip alone. And while he's there, some weird stuff starts happening to him, and he ends up disappearing. So you're kind of watching, trying to figure out and connect the dots to what you think it might be. And the great part about the movie, I think, is it's kind of a loose formula as to what does actually happen to him. So you can kind of create your own story. You know what I mean? Or it could be anything depending on the viewer, you know, depending on what you get out of it. It might be something else compared to the person next to you. So it's a very interesting
concept.
Yeah.
Where in Hawaii did you film it at? Where did you go in Hawaii?
Honolulu. So it was great. We were on that island for about 2 weeks, and I just shot it in between, you know, in between stuff around the hikes, around the different tours and stuff that we did while we were there, and put it all together from that. But I storyboarded on the plane right over, you know, did my whole storyboard and laid it out. And it wasn't just like pick it up and shoot a couple things here and there. It was very organized and well thought through. So there was a lot of preparation.
Nice. Well, we have a caller. I don't usually take callers, but do you want to spin the wheel and see who we have on the phone?
Let's do it. Why not?
Let's spin the wheel and see what happens. It could sometimes be good and sometimes be bad. You never know here. Caller, who are you and where are you calling from?
I am Chris.
Thanks for calling in. What's going on? What can we do for you, man? You calling in to talk to Brandon?
Yeah. Right. Beyonce made me a smoothie. We were running a little late, so I did a to-go cup, took it with me, finished it up, and needed to rinse out this cup, right?
Gotcha.
Like, just don't do it. It was fine when you came in the first time, but don't let me see you in here again. I'm like, whoa, okay, I'm sorry. I come here quite a bit. I've never seen you around here before. Like, being kind of aggro about it. Leave. And kind of awkward. Bit confrontational. Stays with me a while. Well, whatever. I put it behind me. We go to a couple more stores. We're hanging out. Buy a couple items. And my fiance gets hungry for lunch. She's like, where do you want to go? I'm like, let's go back to this bar.
Okay, keep going. Make it quick here. Got to get to a point.
Confronts me. He's like, don't come back here and use our bathroom again, bro. I'm like, whoa, I'm sorry. I, pull a pretty woman on the guy, come in with my bags, sit down for lunch. Just an act of good faith. Like, I buy a beer when I leave the second time because I'm just like, okay, this is like, your complaint's reasonable. You're being a dick. But I see your point. I'll have a beer. Stop and have a beer. We come back later, have more beers and dinner. We're being business, and he's being a douchebag.
All right. Well, I've kind of lost your point on there, but thanks for calling in. Give us a call another time. We're going to go back to talking to Brandon Roth here. Oh, my God. That's so funny.
Awesome.
I love getting random calls like that.
That's one of those stories. I feel like it's kind of like, you know, the hate crime thing. You just sometimes you go somewhere and it's just not they're not as cool as you think they would be.
Exactly. And it was a long story. We got to the point where I probably listened to more. But, yeah, that's kind of not fun when people are little douchebags there. But you got to what it is sometimes. You got to lid on. Well, let's kind of get back into our flow here. We're talking about this Hawaiian Snap, and then you're introducing this to some more film festivals too, and hopefully get picked up a little more, huh?
Yeah, so we're in consideration actually for 5 other film festivals currently, and their deadlines are throughout the summer for their choice making, but it is in consideration, which is awesome. And then once it's done, Reverie is going to be taking Hawaiian Snap live on their app and on their website as well. So I'll have 2 films with Reverie on there in a few months once it's done with the festival circuit. So it was very cool to do. It was so fun to see it excel as much as it has because it's really a one-man show. I do the acting in it, obviously do all the shooting because it's selfies and stuff like that from the Snapchat side of it. And then I did the editing and post-production as well on it. I had a friend of mine, Austin, who produced it. He's a executive produced it, and his production company is a big production. And then I had another friend of mine also named Austin who did some CGI stuff for me on the film. But other than that, it was really a lot of me in it. So it's a very good calling card for me as far as everything I can do. So I'm very excited that it thanks. Yeah. And I'm very excited that it's being received well and people, I never would have expected it could have gone this far. You know, when I shot it, I was just shooting it for fun and it was something I was going to do and maybe it would go on YouTube and be a thing. And it's turned into this whole other thing, going to festivals and then going to be streaming later and stuff like that. So it's really cool.
That is cool. And it's so cool. I mean, that's one of the best awards to have. When you get the Audience Choice Award, that means it's really hitting the people you're making it to see. I mean, you're not – everyone loves movie making, but we're not doing it for ourselves. We're trying to get people out there and get people's attention and hopefully connect with people.
Right.
And that means doing it. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, it was great. It was awesome. It was great to get that award. Yeah, you want – all you want as an artist is for people to – see what you do and have it be able to speak to them in some way enough that they would appreciate it.
That is great. Well, I can't believe we got to wrap up here pretty soon. Keep you a couple minutes over if you don't have plans right away, but talk to me about your goals. What's next for you? Do you have, see yourself going in the next 5 to 10 years? And what would you like to see happen with your career next?
I think I'm still going to be plugging away on this path of creating content and doing shorts and doing that kind of thing. And eventually, the ideal would be to be a part of a creative production team, so, and helping people make original programming for like a Netflix or a Hulu or something, working on original series and that kind of thing. And also just pushing the acting, you know, and trying to get that out there as well. It's all a forward-moving machine, and it's on to the next project. If I start something, I like to see it all the way through and then get it finished and wrapped up. And now that Hawaiian Snap has been in a festival and it's in submission for those other 5 and it's kind of got a place where it's going, I feel like I can start manifesting the next show or the next script or the next project. So,
that's great.
Yeah, just
you want to do all this under Innovative Squirrel? Do you want to kind of bring it in-house and do all this creation in the hopefully?
Yeah. I have my production company, Innovative Squirrel, and I want it to grow and kind of, you know, start getting some speed going. But now that it has 3 films under its belt, it's a good start for sure.
Awesome. Now, talk about your fitness. Obviously, like I said earlier in the show, I saw you on Instagram. You're a very fit person, very handsome. Are you doing this more for personal now? Is it something, obviously, as an actor, you have to keep yourself in good shape and things like that. But what do you get out of it? I mean, you were actually working out before you came on my show. I mean, my show's never been associated with working out. I'm a chubby guy, so I'm liking that all of a sudden.
But tell me, what
does this do for you? What is all this? Because you do have this amazing body. What does it just make you feel good? Does it help your craft? Or what's your goals that way?
For me, fitness was a big part of my life in my teens because I wasn't like necessarily the most popular, and I kind of think, you know, back then I knew something was different and that I had these feelings and stuff. And so it was a very meditative time for me to go and spend that hour at the gym by myself, listening to my music and getting in my own head and being creative. You know, I was concerts in my head or, you know, being able to just be by myself and just zone out. And even to this day, my fitness is very me time. It's just me time, you know, and it's something that
That's great.
For myself. Yeah. But I think in turn, being an actor, yeah, being fit and stuff is a part of the career as well. So it kind of works out. But yeah, it's a lot more about me as an individual and just my own time and the way it makes me feel and stuff than anything else.
I love that.
So,
and I see you have a couple of tattoos, like you have writing and then you have, what is the inspiration for your tattoos? Is that something that kind of marks journeys for you? Because I've been trying to, I'm thinking about getting a tattoo, but I'm scared to death of needles. But talk to me about your tattoo journey and walk through it here, Brandon.
I have a few tattoos, and they all just kind of have different meanings to them. The one on my rib cage, it's writing, it says, "If seeing is believing, then I was blind to love." And it just kind of, it's a quote that I kind of thought of that just speaks to like how people forget to treat each other. And even for me, it was at a hard time where I was a hopeless romantic type, and it was kind of seeming like people aren't really that way anymore, especially in a big city, you know? And so
right.
it kind of spoke to me to remind me of of show love and show compassion to everybody, no matter who they are, you know? And
oh,
then,
I love that.
So that, yeah, so it's just kind of a reminder of that. And then I have two on my arm that are designed by me, and it's my travel band. So one is a kangaroo that I designed, and it's I got that done when I was in Australia. And then my other one is a volcano that I got done in Hawaii. So I'm going to continue to go around and design as I go, as I travel more, my travel band.
Oh, I love that idea.
Yeah, no, it's actually turned out to be one of my favorite tattoos, and it's the most simple one of all of them. But it turned out to be one of my favorites. And then I have a bird feather on my arm that's, like, watercolored, and it represents, like, a blackbird feather, but I didn't want it to just be black, so I did that gasoline effect kind of coloring.
Right.
And blackbirds are pretty interesting. They represent yin and yang because of the dark versus the light sky, but it's also about being open. So they have signs for you, but it's only when you're open to all possibilities of a situation that they will make their signs visible to you. So you can't see what they have to offer you until after you're open-minded to every outcome that could be. And so I always thought that was kind of a cool thing to just live in life. It's kind of just do stuff and be open to where it is. Being a Taurus, I'm very planned. You know, I want everything to have a plan, a time, a date. And so it just kind of reminds me to be a little bit more open-minded to things as far as where
they're gonna go. Yeah, you are a deep person, Mr. Brandon Lee Roth. I'm loving you more and more every second here. Very cool. As a person scared of needles, where should I put my first tattoo that'll give me the least amount of pain?
Oh, geez. Not anywhere on the bone or anything. So, like, the rib cage, don't do that. I don't know. I guess the ones that did not hurt the most are the travel ones on my forearm here, but it's not near any bone. So just pick a place that's not close to a bone.
I don't know how you did the littering there. I look at that. It's like I couldn't even – it put me in pain just to look at it. I'm telling you. Oh, my goodness. All right, and then the last thing we're going to finish up with today that I like to do with everybody whenever I can find it on theirs, and you happen to leave it on your website, so we're going to have fun with it. I love when actors put special skills down on their resume. So,
oh, no.
You're in trouble.
All right,
impersonations, mister. I want an impersonation of the gingerbread man.
Oh, gosh. Okay, hang on. It's been a while. I'm like, you actually, now I know I need to go update my website. Okay, let's see if I can do it. I don't know. Okay, give me 2 seconds. I got to get, it's the one from Shrek. Let me do the little scene. So he's like, run, run as fast as you can. You can't touch me. I'm the gingerbread man. And he's like, eat me.
That was good. And what about Linda
good, right?
The good? This I got to hear.
Oh, God. Let us be glad. Let us be grateful. From Wicked. Anybody? That was a high
falsetto. I love
that. That was not.
And you have high falsetto on there. I think you just proved that one. Last one I got to know because I don't know what the hell is RP or received pronunciation. What does that mean?
Received pronunciation is when you dictate your words very properly. And I went to that was terrible, by the way. Nobody judged that received pronunciation. I don't have it as well as I used to. But when I went to school, they made us all take dictation class, and I got my butt kicked with my Minnesota accent, so it got
funny kicked
out of me.
I love it.
Now when I talk to my mom or my relatives, if I talk to them long enough, it'll kind of stick, and you'll hear a couple glitches throughout the day. But
well, Brandon Lee Roth, it was my pleasure to get to talk to you for over an hour. Thanks for spending some time with me. Tell all my listeners where they can follow you so they can see your magnificence also on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, all that fun stuff, or just your website so they can find all of it at once.
Yeah, so pretty much any of the hashtags and stuff, it's at Brandon Lee Roth, BrandenLeeRoth. And that's my Instagram, that's my Twitter, and I believe that's my Facebook. And then on as far as websites concerned, it's www.BrandonLeeRoth.com. And on there, you can find access to the Hawaiian Snap and Logan Plus pages as well. So, and there's some video clips, sample clips on there.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, my friend. I really appreciate it. We're going to have you back very soon.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. Seriously, I appreciate it.
Anytime. Stay on the line for me. Guys, we're going to go ahead and sign off today. Tomorrow we have an all-new show with Forrest. We're going to have the fantastic Wesley Woods, Mel England, and Sherry Lewis. Wednesday, Michael Vega. Same bat time, same bat channel, 2 o'clock Pacific time, 5 o'clock Eastern time. We're going to play out today with a little bit of our good buddy Preston Wiggins. This is Femme Fatale. Thanks so much for listening to Left of Straight Show. We'll see you tomorrow.
When you're looking for something new, it's at that moment that you see her. All the women want to be her. It's true, she's got that mysterious allure, too sexy to ignore. You tell yourself to just say no, but with just one look you turn to stone.
Yeah.